so you can spend your day. Tony Stanthis, the young man who died, mm-hmm. he had a daughter?
Well, yes, he had a daughter. That's the daughter there. But
who did he marry?
I don't know. He married somebody local, not a local girl.
He had a good practice over in Brandon.
Tampa? Brandon?
Mm-hmm. He was going out to the beach. Pretty good. You could use a little more sugar. That's when his son died there, Anthony. That's when his daddy died. See, this is when he ran a shoe store back in 1914.
See,
that was another name, Greek name.
And Stathis.
Men's half sole, 75 to 85 cents. Now they charge $20 for a half sole and shoes run.
Yeah, this advertisement, the first Greek's name is spelled P-O-R-T-U-L-A-S, and Stathis, S-T-A-T-H-I-S. And it's got Arcadia, Florida, 81, P.O. Box 81. DeSoto Shoe Hospital. Usually what happened is that it, you know.
Do you, have you run any prejudice against Greeks or?
Yes, sir.
Jews or?
All I can report is what I've talked about with other people, and I've only asked these sorts of questions of Greek people, you know, and yeah. They had the problem in Sarasota where the local people wouldn't let the Greek guy live in their neighborhood and do business there. So he did was, this is why I want to find out more about this guy, this was great. He went and he did stuff with the black community and made a bundle, because what he did was he became the intermediary between the white people and the blacks, and so he just raked up money. He became one of the biggest people in the area. But there was a lot of
probably sounds like a thunderstorm.
Do you have any of the advertisements from the Greeks who had restaurants here? Is there another question?
No, I think I have little inserts and advertisements like these, things like this, where there wasn't large advertisements. I wonder what Figel, what name is Figel, F-I-E-G-E-L. Is that Greek?
No, it's not, Figel? But you see, you know, they did change their names. Like, what did you say, the man's name was Cliff? Or
Yeah, Clifton.
Clifton. Yeah, Clifton. That's no Greek name.
No, I know.
Clifton is.
His name could have been like Werna or something like that, which means mountain, you know.
Oh.
And so then he came here and then they made it. Yeah, they did like things where if their name in Greek was, you translated it literally and it came out the son of Tom, and it became Thompson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if their name's, you know, they could be Petro Yannis, and then they became Peter John, because that's what that means in Greek. So a lot of that, you know, you run across people whose name is, you know, Johnson. I said, oh, Johnson, how could you be, you
well,
know,
actually,
Greek? But then when you hear it in Greek, it's exactly
centuries ago, they didn't even have last names.
Yeah, no, they didn't.
I mean,
and nobody did. Well,
my,
certain groups
my name, Milton, is really from Milton, like John of Milton.
Yeah.
John Milton got his name from the fact that his dad lived in a mill town. And and a lot of times they named silversmith, goldsmith, and all that, but was the trade that the men were in. I mean, you know, they had to originate from something.
Well, that's like Wainwright and Miller, you know, Shoemaker. Well, this
Smith
guy here, you know.
Itself, Smith.
Yeah, sure.
That's a trade.
Well, sure.
Silversmith, blacksmith.
Sure. The relative of Tom Gaskins was Breakstone or some name like that.
Stonebreaker.
Stonebreaker.
Yeah.
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 That's what I immediately thought of.
You here's interesting. This is on a calendar. We got, so this to the Centennial Committee. This is the last five remaining Civil War veterans.
Huh.
This picture was taken in 1928. Taken at what is now the courthouse annex. It was then the home of this man's daughter and her family. And this man, he was a
was a Baptist preacher for many years, but he's also a Civil War veteran. And these others were. They all died by about a year or two after that. This man died in 29. I've got his obituary. And he's got a lot of relatives around him now. Believe me, Carlton. It's the name right, Carlton. And they're in the woods full of Carlton Smiths and Jones and Browns.
Yeah.
But I know the relatives of these people. This lady, he had a daughter, he had a son and a daughter, but he had a daughter that was a Tribune reporter for many years, Tampa Tribune.
Hmm. Well.
Now listen, are you going to Xerox or do you have Xerox?
Well, yeah, what I'd like to do is, yeah, any of this, I see, for, you know, my own stuff, not for the state, but any of the stuff on the Greeks, I'd like to copy that, and whatever
well,
that might...
Well, what I can do is, do you have a Xerox machine?
No, do they have one here in town?
Yeah, I've got the Archie, and those, I can Xerox about anything you want down here.
All right, well, I don't want to, you know, I just...
Newspaper office.
Yeah, well, all I'm interested in the... You know, the Greeks
and
the state.
Picture, that would be good for you to Xerox this too, so you'd have
right.
a story on Doubleday.
All righty. Yeah, and I'm going to take copies of those tomorrow when I have the light. And 9 o'clock. That's the only thing I have to leave early.
Well,
make sure that John, I want to get from John the copy of the photo thing to give you.
Copy of John.
John McCarthy, the county historian at Sarasota, I gave him a copy of my thing, which I don't have now because I didn't bring it with me back again, of various grants if you have photograph collections and stuff and foundations and stuff. And I just want to make sure I gave you a copy of that. I can get it from John. I'll just call him tonight.
Well, listen, give me a list of some of the stuff you want Xerox. Now, you're going to photograph.
Yes, I'm going to photograph that. And
are you going to photograph anything about this shoe? Or you want me to Xerox any of that about this shoe lady and her husband? Or you want to photograph that? Yeah.
Well, what I would like to do is, I definitely want a photograph of this, the carving. The shoeshine lady, I'd rather just Xerox that and just that be a Xerox. Just what you think is the most representative thing, just a page or two. And that's it.
Well, see, I can take this out, what you want, and know right where to put it back.
All right, sir.
And then I'll get those books out of the way.
Is it easier to Xerox this? I mean, I got my own camera, that's why, you know.
Well, it'll probably be, I can Xerox it,
right.
But then you can see if you want it
right. Okay.
Photographed. I can go down there a little early before you get here. I was trying to think of something else that you may...
Well, don't, I mean, we'll come back and I'll speak to you again tomorrow in the morning, and then, you know, I don't want to, don't get excited, you know. And, just from my own personal...
Tom Gaskin, was there anything in there you wanted that you don't have?
No, sir, I think everything's fine. I mean, just let me, here, let me go
How
through.
How about the Gay Roach have? Anything on that?
Yeah, Major Gaskins. I didn't know they call him Major Gaskins.
You know, there's a girl here that does a lot of this work. You may be interested in her work. I hadn't thought about her. Now, this is probably 2 or 3 years old. Her name is Margaret Rood. She used to take old historical pictures and then draw them. And she had a whole calendar, you know, 1, 2, 3 years ago. This is a drawing. And those would be easy to, in fact, she may even have a calendar or something like that that you might want, which is in the area of art, and you do collect art, and these are historical buildings, River Bridge, and the courthouse downtown, railroad station, and I don't know all the stuff. Remember, I've got them all, but I don't remember. Now that was about that Indian, Seminole Indian. You interested in any of that?
No, I don't think so at this time, sir. I'm going to remember that because I have to go to Brighton Indian Reservation and talk to them. But at this moment, I
now
can't.
Now this is that Sorrel Brothers Fruit Company. I was telling you about. This is early orange back then. But this is another picture of that girl. This building is down there, downtown. See, I don't have the identity of anybody there.
No, I understand.
But this used to be a packing house back early part of the century. It was converted later into a wholesale grocery store. But since in the 30s, and I remember when it was converted, into now Chris Building and Supply Company, where it runs right along here. And that fruit house, packing house, ran right here on the other side of this.
What is you saying, moving this way?
But that girl, she may have some extra calendars of her drawings on that.
Right,
I think that would be real nice if you could get a whole calendar of that. I may have some stored out there in the
Well, I can always call her and stuff and talk to her.
Margaret Rude is her name. You want to put it down.
Yes, sir.
And put artist calendar.
All right. Well, I would.
Now, there's things like that. You want to photograph that, say, Dr. McSwain? That's it's a painting by Frank Bolin. The man's been dead many years now, but he was an outstanding portrait painter here in DeSoto County. And you may run across some other paintings of his if you see Dr. Martin or Mrs. Ward McSwain. She lives right.
You better see Ms. McSwain, Dr. Martin. You have that important.
There's a doctor there.
Well, I don't think that they're interested in the art that, you know, Western renditions of art. I think they're interested more in folk things and stuff like this. And but I certainly like a Xerox of this thing about the roach, gator roach hives.
All right, give me what you want out of there.
And then I'd like Xerox, and I could copy, or I could copy those with my camera, whatever.
Have you ever seen
the
gator roach hive?
Yes, I have.
Well, I'll tell you what, you keep that to copy, then leave that in there.
All right, sir.
And I'll Xerox this.
All right.
I was trying to think of, is there anything else that we had looked at? There's lots of other stuff that you might look at if I knew what you...
Yes, sir, I know.
That if I kind of think of everything, but it's...
Well, don't...
Everything don't come to my mind at
that's
one
right.
time.
No, there's no problem. This is great. I mean, don't feel that, you know, you've helped me a great deal. Don't feel as if, you know, you haven't done that, because you have. And I'm just, from my own stuff, I'm very interested in anything and everything that
now,
there
you're
is.
You're not interested in inventors, especially, are you?
No, sir. Well, in what's...
outstanding inventors here. Now, see, this was an article here on... There's a picture of me with a folding postcard of Arcadia prior to World War I. And then there's some of my photograph postcards that you didn't even see those. It's at the beginning of that one of those
fold-out ones. I see.
And this is just an article I wrote on penny postcards provide pictorial history. This is some of my articles, some of my photographs.
Yeah, well, you should really also think about if, and it seems to interest you.
I got a good collection of old filling station with hand pumps, the old pumps that newspapers, all the old newspapers. You know, you heard of Jimmy Dozier, the general that was captured
in
Italy?
Yeah, that's right.
That's my picture. I've got about 8 pictures of him when he was a baby. He had never seen those pictures. When he came back over here, I gave him a copy of each one of them. That's a picture of him in high school, and that's a drawing of him I made after he was released and came back to America. He lives around here now. Old grocery stores, prices of stuff, displayed in them.
Were there any Greeks selling grocery stores here in town?
No, I think they were in...
Just restaurants?
In restaurants and clothing stores.
That's interesting.
This is the canning company I was telling you about. You know, you got a label up?
Yes, sir.
This is a picture of interior when they were sectionizing grapefruit. And they put them in cans. I wrote up the history of the Arcadia paper that goes back 100 years. And I wrote the history of the Florida Baptist Children's Home that moved from here in the 40s to move from Lakeland.
What's that a picture of up there?
That's a girl. Oh, this is a pastoral scene. That is one of them. It's one of my prize and joy is that picture right there. Let me see, where would that be now?
I mean, it's cattle and children and buildings and what all?
Yeah, they had 80 acres of ground here that they had their own dairy. They grew vegetables. They had little orange trees. Mm-hmm. They had pasture land.
Mm-hmm.
And this is some of the cows. And there's some of the kids there used to milk the cows. They had a barn over here for them. There's some of the buildings. There was 8 buildings in all. Nice dormitory. But I think that's a very
beautiful
study and a pastoral study. This is the panoramic view of some of the buildings. All this was the front yard here. Now, it's right down to the end of this street. Mm-hmm. There, the Nazarene Church is there.
This is a really striking photograph.
When I wrote the article about it, it was printed in the paper, they got a hold of it up at Lakeland, and they soon laid it down here. Bought all the material that I had on the Florida Baptist Children's Home. That's that picture, and this is where they've got condominiums down there on the same location.
Well, this is separate from what I'm supposed to be doing for the state, but I would really like to know anything there is on the local Greeks that used to be in this town, for sure, or in the county.
Well, let me write that down.
Okay. Any and all Greeks, honest to God. Here's a pen.
There's not a whole lot that I remember, except Stathis, Cavis, the ones that are here now, Clifton.
Are the ones that are here?
I'm pretty sure Bob Clifton was a Greek. That's not a Greek name.
Yeah, that's right. Who are the people here now?
You know, I can't call their names. It's their own name, but I can't call their name.
Yeah, that's okay.
There's a pretty good sized family. It seemed like about 5 or 6 boys.
Yeah, something like that. That's what it looks like in there.
1 or 2 girls, maybe, and the mother.
No, man.
Yeah, you know their names? Costa.
Costadinas or something like that. Does that sound anywhere near Greek?
Yes.
Something like that. That might not be.
Can you think of any other Greeks that have lived here since we can remember?
No. Just the Cabot and the
Stathis. See, that would be an interesting subject to study that I haven't even got in my mind.
Yeah.
The Jews, the Greeks. I've got it on blacks. Well, they were Jews, yeah.
I know.
And Rosans
were
Jews.
Were there any Armenians?
No.
Syrians?
No, man. No Syrians or Arabians or...
Italians?
Yes, we've had some Italians, I think.
Well, see, in this ad that you have here for, in the ad here that talks about Portulus and
Stathis. Yeah, that was before my day,
yeah.
and
evidently
1914.
He wasn't too well known, or wasn't well represented in newspapers. See, so yeah. I don't. Mm-hmm. That name wasn't long lasting or very well known here. So I would have to have gotten that from Mr. Stanton. He'd been dead now many years.
Yeah. No. He had a daughter, Gloria.
Yeah, she's still living.
Bagley, B-A-G-L-I.
She married Guy Bagley, who was the anchor man for one of the Tampa
newscasts for WDAE, Tampa.
Okay, Tampa. And he committed suicide, I think. And he used to play for the Tampa Smokers. He used to be a professional baseball player, too, before that.
Yeah, well, I would like Xeroxes of any of these things on these Greek people. Absolutely, without question.
Yeah, well, just give me that out of there. There's a home there. That
I knew that house was painted sort of pink on the outside, but the article said it was pink inside and outside.
You want to see that? This is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All over.
The Cavises?
Mm-hmm. No, Stathis. Oh, pink.
No, yeah, I'm just saying for people, though.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything on Bob Clifton?
No. He went to school with his son, didn't
he? All I can tell you, his name was Junius.
What was his name?
Junius.
Junius?
J-U-N-I-U-S.
J-U-N-I-U-S?
Mm-hmm.
Junius.
That sounds like Junior, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Junius Clifton?
Or Julius, J-U-L-I-U-S.
Well, there was a lot of interpretation between what was written in Greek and what was written in American.
That was a common name between Junior and Julius.
I don't know.
Maybe they made it up.
I don't know. That happens too.
Yeah, I know. Some of the names these black people name their kids, you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
I saw one. This was a white person, I think, that I saw the other day. Their son was in service and...
I'm glad you mentioned about Jews, Italians, and Greeks, and things like that. That will be another subject that we could add to our list. Cubans, we've had some Cuban families here early years ago.
And Mexicans.
Well, now we have a lot of those now, migrants, but I don't...
They work in...
I'm talking about historically. These have come in recent years. I don't know of any Mexican family that has settled here and become... going to school in business like, do you? Are professionals of anything? Mexicans?
Not in business.
But we did have some Cubans back in the
30s. Those about Brother Patterson's man, they were
poor. Well, they're migrants, and they have settled in the last few years. But what I'm talking about is coming here,
regular,
you know, when there wasn't, they didn't come in droves like do across the Mexican border now. I mean, you know, we have a lot of them coming in now that they're just here seasonal or
migrant.
We have doctors of almost
every nationality. We have a
lot
of state hospital, all kinds of Indians, a lot of Indians and Orientals.
They've got Dr.
The state
Dan.
Hospital, yeah.
I don't know what he is. Dan.
Their names are so long, they always call them K or D.
Yeah, they get it. I know. That's typical. That's
they
always him.
Dan
American people are lazy about pronouncing names. I mean, if anybody's got a name
that's
not Smith or Jones or Brown or Johnson or something like that.
Is it Dimitru?
I think that's one of it, part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Dan goes with the Dimitru.
Why? Can you tell me why people have long names? I mean,
every culture has their own rules on naming, but what happens is that because... of course, I don't know how to say this. Those names aren't wrong in their culture.
Africa, even where they don't have any education, they got long names.
Well, we've got long names in McGillicuddy.
That people were that didn't have much of education or culture, they would have real short names, or they wouldn't have to pronounce it.
No, there is no difference. Culture has nothing to do with level of sophistication. And by culture, I mean this. There's no relationship between the type of technology that you use, whether it's motivated by fossil fuels or any other kind of thing.
Yeah. Well,
every place in the planet is complex.
You would know things like that that I don't even think about.
Well, there have never been any primitive people on the face of the planet. You have contemporaries.
Oh,
okay?
Is that right?
That's right, because if you go into study...
No, third countries are not considered.
The United States is wrong, and it dominates the other cultures and the other economies of the world. That's just the way it is. And what happens is now to say, well, those other third world nations are this, the third world nation. Third world nations don't get to do a lot of stuff because it's not... I have a friend, he's in a Liberia now. He's working with the Liberians. They grow rice in Liberia. That's one of the main crops that they grow. They all eat Uncle Ben's concentrated, or what is it, converted rice, out of the box. Rob goes down to the market, and you know, there they are, big as life, okay? So the thing is, like, why, when they grow rice in their country, do they end up with Uncle Ben's rice? Because it's not even good anymore, in the sense of, like, it's got all, you know, it's been hulled, it's been whitened, it's been bleached, you know, it's not the same nutritional quality. The guy, they're sick over there, they don't have enough food. Well, it's because, you know, the companies went in there, and they buy all the rice out wholesale, process in the United States, and sell it back to them. England did that to us, and that's why we're United States, because we fought against that. You know, some people say, well, third world nations can't do this, third world nations can't do that. Well, the third world nation, or third world colony, so was the United States, couldn't do anything either, which is what all stamp acts were about and all that kind of stuff. So you talk about federal regulations today, well, in the old days, man, you couldn't do it or you died. And it's the same way it is in the nations now, in third world nations, they can't do a lot. And people say, well, how come they can't advance? You know, they don't have the technology, they don't have the machines, they're not allowed to have them. Part of the problem of the United States was we couldn't take our own raw products and develop them. That guy had to go to England, see the cotton gin, memorize it, and come back and build it here. Because we weren't allowed to develop that kind of technology. So when people say, you know, third world nations do this, or, you know, it really gets me hot, because it's like, it's not because people are wrong or they want to see something bad, but it's like, you know, the third world nations can't control it. I mean, they're not in a position to, like, do stuff. And when they say these wars, like in Chad, there's a war in Afghanistan, there's all these wars over there, well, it's Russia supplying one side, Americans are supplying the other. And anybody who's an anthropologist, you know, we sit around, like, you know, you talk
shop. Most times we're supplying both sides.
Well, sometimes we do that, too, because we want to, like, you know, we want to back the winner.
Like in Iraq and Iran, we're trying to keep a balance of power. I guess we figure maybe if we supply them both, they'll commit suicide or either kill each other.
Well, they'll do something. But I think it's really sad, and I really don't take the position that the United States is a good place in the sense of its foreign policy, because in point of fact, if you pay attention to that, and you're with the people who, like, go and stay with the people who live there, not like some career diplomat who flies in, lives at the Hilton Hotel, goes to the embassy, goes to see the rich people of that country, and then comes home again. I'm not talking
and
about that.
And yet everybody tries to imitate us, don't they?
Well, we're Rome now. You know, we're,
I mean,
we're the
Western
country.
They got it in Russia now. They're thinking it was in my Western ways. It's just as... You hate to see them be degenerate as we are.
Well, a lot of the stuff is we trade back and forth. They have, like, a lot of fruit now that comes from around the world. There's, like, clothing. Somebody was saying that they'd taken pictures, they were at a meeting, and somebody had taken videos of, movie films of China. And
cabin constructed out of regular logs and stayed up there on the courthouse grounds for a year or more during the centennial.
Hmm. Yeah, Remington, the artist, was in Arcadia.
Yeah, he painted that.
He came here for what, the Spanish-American War? War with Cuba?
Well, he didn't come here for that reason. He came here to really paint the cowboys. This Bonnazelle was the most famous of Arcadia cowboys, but I've got a whole series of photographs of the paintings of
Remington
when he was in Arcadia in 1895.
Howard and Velma Melton's house in Arcadia in DeSoto County. A lot of that, I was going to ask you about church music, because the church music, Western church music, was influenced by contact during the Crusades.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the instruments.
Sing song, it was without any inflection, or it was kind of a something like tribes have that just, I forget what it's called. In studying music, I studied church music in college, and we had to sing some of the psalms, for instance, without
regular music. It was, it had a sing-song value to it, but it was something like some of the religious groups even go today. They just chants, kind of chants.
Yeah. Gregorian chants.
And Gregorian chants at one of them, yes, that's right. So it emerged, but when it's been modern, it's been ancient.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I don't like it, but I mean, it's true that loud music I don't care for, and music I don't hear the words of I don't like, and some of the ones I like to hear the words of I don't like, because the words aren't conducive to my thinking. But the truth of the matter is, what is going and selling is, you might say, primitive music, or music from the primitive people that's got new instruments, types of instruments. The old drum is still there, just like the beat in the heart of Africa now.
Well, the drum was made illegal in the United States when the slaves came. They found out that the drum was an instrument that brought the people together and caused them to keep their religion, so they banned drums, except for New Orleans.
Well, I knew also that, I remember the time when drums were not, they weren't outlawed in churches, but they were not conducive to worship, because it was a carryover from the pagan countries that were pagan in religion, as far as that concern. In other words, they weren't Christian, and they were not conducive to our form of worship, you know, in Protestant churches, for instance.
Well, but you were saying that there was a tradition here in the area of singing and stuff in church, wasn't there? What kind of songs?
It was back in my boyhood days, it was conventional singing, you know, and then the old hymns of John Wesley, or Charles Wesley, that was written in the 1700s. Charles Wesley was Brother John Wesley, whose group finally formed the Methodist Church. John Wesley never did, was a Methodist in the sense of a denomination. He was a minister of the Church of England, but he formed societies that were called Methodists within the Episcopal Church, or Church of England, and they were called Methodists because of their strict, methodical religious worship, that they were kind of separate groups from the regular congregation. That they were kind of holy people, they were called, because they separated themselves from the bulk of the congregation, and they prayed more, and they read the scripture more, and they were more devout. And that's where they got the word Methodist. It's interesting to study all the, just like study the origin of languages, study the origin of churches. You know, we all came from some other group.
Yeah.
None of us original. I mean, you know, some, like Church of Christ claims they are the first church, or original church of the Old Testament. But history doesn't bear out that there's no church, even the Catholic Church, that really is the church of the New Testament, that worshiped as Jesus taught his disciples. I mean, you know, after all, they went from Judah worshiping of the Jewish law till the time of Christ, and it was not revolutionary then, it was just a gradual change, because Jesus worshiped in the temple, he taught in the temple, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, he used the Old Testament scripture, because there was no New Testament scripture written in the times of Jesus. It was written after the times of Jesus. But anyway, the merging of all churches has its origin in some other group that they broke away from for one reason or another.
Well, what I'm interested in, and I'd just like to pursue here with you for a moment, is this whole thing about a local church music. I mean, I come from the Greek Orthodox Church. We're the original guys. But we don't, and we have a choir in our church. But we don't sing in our church. In other words, we don't get a hymnal to sing. There are things that we do involve, that we participate in with the priest, with the service, to, you know, go from beginning to end. But we don't have any. We don't have hymnals, and we don't sing. Now, there's certain holidays when we sing as a community, you know, as a commune. But we don't. We don't do it every Sunday. So when I'm asking you these questions about, like, do they sing in church? See, I'm very interested because we don't do that. It's weird. I mean, when I go to church.
Well, y'all have a lot of Greek music, though, dancing a lot.
Oh, well, yeah, but not in church.
But it's not religious. Anyway, it's not really religious, then.
Well, there is. Well, we have a long musical tradition, ecclesiastical music tradition, for sure. Liturgical singing, for sure.
Well, yeah. Don't you do that in church?
Well, but we don't sing as a congregation. See, we have a choir.
Yeah.
See, they made this difference. When you come from Greece, the congregation will sing. They also stand. There are no pews in a Greek Orthodox church in Greece. You have to stand or you don't come, you know.
Oh, really?
And it's a long service. It's a couple hours or sometimes three. There's none of this, no 40-minute namby-pamby stuff. You go in there and you got to go all the way. And they're not quiet places, you know. They're very very public and they can talk. And when they have chanters, because we have chanters and the priest chants the service and sings the service, and we have chanters on the side. Then you can also have the community, you know, that's separate from that, the sing along at different times, because there are hymns that are involved in it, but it's not the same. You don't get out, you know, and sing number 152, or you don't get out the hymnal and sing page 54, and just
and but I've you do have some TV. Form to follow, don't you?
Absolutely, it's the same one every. Well, what happens
well, it's
is
the same thing.
Well, it's no, I should say this. We have like we have four liturgies. It's cyclical because it follows a calendar.
Oh, yeah.
And so we switch from one to the other. They were written by St. John Chrysostom and different people from the old days. And it follows the cycle of the Bible, of course, from, you know, so you go through Easter and you go through that. So the Bible reading follows that as you go along through the whole calendar of the year. And so do the hymns, because like for our Holy Week, there's some just really great hymns. And that's about the only time when we do sing together as a group is on Holy Week, like on Thursday. There's a great hour and a half service that this nun wrote, this Greek nun wrote, and that talks about the Virgin Mary, and it's just a great. They always do that one too. When I say it's the same, that's what I mean. In other words, when you come up to the holiday, it's the same group of hymns, or when they have them, you know. But like to go every Sunday, like we don't sit down and sing like Protestant people do.
Do you have regular services, say, on Sunday or?
Yeah, every Sunday, yeah. And we have during the week, too, for special days and then for, like, you know, saint days. And
yeah. I didn't know a lot about Greek church. I studied some of the Greek and Egyptian Coptic church or one of the early churches that broke away from.
Coptic church?
Yeah, Coptic church, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's in Egypt. No, that's right. Because
Is that Greek or Egyptian?
What happened was, if I understand this properly, there were like, they had the seven initial sees of the church, which was Rome and Constantinople and Antioch and all them.
Oh, yeah. That's
and
right.
Then Rome and Romans.
They had their own pope.
Everybody, there were seven places.
Constantinople had a pope, and Rome had a pope, and it seemed like somewhere else in Europe they had about three or four popes.
Well, there, yeah.
Each one of them were claiming to be the pope. And that's where they were dividing in from the, I guess, the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah, we split from them. There were seven. And Rome split away from the other six. And what happened was just how, like, Protestantism happened, where there were splits up in Northern Europe and stuff all the way up to England. Well, going down from, like, Greece east, down into, you know, into Egypt and all the way down into India, those groups of people calling themselves Christians also split up. And got
well,
away
you
from
know,
each
speaking
other.
About the Coptic, is it Coptic?
I think it's Coptic, actually.
Coptic Church. It seems like in that church they have canonized or made the pilot a saint. Do you know anything about
no,
that?
No, sir, I don't.
And I never could understand that, how, you know, the man that
yeah,
took
well,
the
what
attitude
happened?
That mm-hmm. he washed his hand, innocent of the blood of Christ, mm-hmm. He said, take him and crucify him, but I won't have anything to do with it. I just remember that, and that's about the only thing I can remember that particular group. And then I read a translation of the Bible by that was from I believe it was from the Greek church. George But anyway, there's parts of it that's kind of really interesting to me because I studied Hebrew and Greek in college, and not, you know, just a year of each, enough to get out with a theological degree, but I didn't, where I could speak it very good and read it very good, but well, one of the
scriptures that says it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Mm-hmm. In this translation by George, he was one of the great translators of one of the early New Testament, said it's easier for a rope to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to go through the eye of a needle. And it showed in the Bible that the close character of a rope and a camel, they were so close together that you could see how the translator may have made a mistake. One of them
erred.
George, I wish I could think of his name, but I don't remember a lot of the difference in the translation, except I remember that because I was so impressed with it. I thought, well, that is probably makes more sense, although I've understood the camel going through the eye of a needle.
It's a small entrance
into the wall of Jerusalem where they had to take off all their gear and crawl through, you know, where a camel couldn't do it with luggage and everything. But the rope seemed to make sense to me. That either one of them wouldn't have heard.
Yeah.
I mean, it just said, showing them.
I think that was all we got today.
Yeah. Well, listen, this fellow works
till 5.
But he may be off now. Do you want to go down there and see what you can do with him?
What I want to do is
You can check with him tomorrow.
All right, yeah, because I'm going to.
You going to be here tomorrow?
Yes, sir. I'm going to be driving back through
Maybe. Maybe. Since it's too. Well, I could call him up and ask him if he's. I could run down there and see him, or.
Well, all I want to do is, and I'm serious about this, Howard, I don't want to have anything that I do interrupt anything that you're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah. Well, the pictures that he took now, it doesn't designate where they were taken.
But it does depict the
rodeo. It's rodeo pictures, action shots, men on horses and wild bulls and things like that. They're all action shots, and they're all in color.
Okay.
And evidently he got them as a package.
Okay.
He didn't collect them over a period of years because they're all the same style and same condition. So I know he must have got them as a collector's. Maybe he sold them as a collector's.
Yeah, that's right. Do you think he would let me copy them? At least one.
Well, I know he would let you copy them.
Yes or no?
I know he would. Yes.
Yeah. I don't have to copy all of them. I just have to have things represented.
If it saves you time and he's down there, I'll go down there and talk to him now. I'll call him up first.
All right, maybe.
I'm talking about Mr. Davenport about some pictures down there. He's gone.
You might not want to cross this lake.
Well, I can ask him if I can borrow him from him.
Charles called. Did you?
Oh, I meant to go down there and get
him. Well, he's still down there, I guess, but he said he's not going to be around tomorrow. Maybe not the next day.
I
just want to do
it. Well, let me call Mr. Danforth.
Sorry, you're part of living history now.
With something. Saying something stupid on the paper.
No.
I hope I didn't.
No, ma'am, don't worry about that at all.
Because we made mistakes once at home when I was in the kitchen.
Earlier, but
I was in the kitchen and they were taping in here or something. I wasn't even thinking about it because they were just talking.
That's right.
And
okay, there used to be Greeks at restaurants. Sure, Stuart.
We had Stan Stathis, who came here way early in the century. He opened a juice store, repair shop, and then he got into the restaurant business. And finally, I think he was in the liquor business. Well, he and his wife.
Not Stan Stathis.
Yeah, he had a liquor store too. Earl Wood was a.
You mean Cabot?
No, honey, Stan Stathis.
Okay.
Earl Wood worked for him both as a shoe repairman and as
I didn't ever know that.
Bartender. And then also, his wife ran a dress shop, and one of his only son became a doctor, medical doctor, when Braden, he died prematurely, he was a young fellow, I guess in his late 20s, early 30s, and he had a daughter that married Guy Bagley, who was a TV personality in Tampa in the early days of television. Yeah, Tony did. And then we had some Greeks that ran other restaurants here. We got a nice Greek restaurant here now. You
ever saw
that Paradise? Yeah,
mm-hmm,
nice family.
Do you have any pictures of those restaurants? With a dress shop
I
or
don't,
the bar?
I think I've got a picture of my staff's dress shop. I don't have
it. It was right by Dozier's store, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right on this one. And then George Cabot.
Yeah, he had a saloon, he had a restaurant, had a bakery, had a liquor store.
And his two nephews came over from Greece and lived with him.
Yeah, he's got a couple of nephews
and
that he raised.
One of them is a painter, isn't he?
One's a painter. The other works for Eli Witt Cigar Company. I can't have a tenth of Greg.
Oh.
Greg. Let me see.
Stamos?
Status. These are families and individuals here, and these are our broader subjects, like service stations, city businesses, and banks, and automobile dealers, churches, and
by subjects.
Hospital, post office.
Do you ever go through Thomasville, Georgia?
No, ma'am.
You're not too far from it when you go to White Springs.
Thomasville, Georgia?
Mm-hmm. It's just above Tallahassee.
Mm-hmm. And what's in Thomasville, Georgia?
They just have quite a few Greeks there. Restaurants. They have good food.
Yeah, boy, they're famous for
their
Greek
salad.
Restaurants.
They're Greek
salad. In fact,
salad
just about everything in Thomasville, Georgia is Greek and restaurants. And they really put on some feast over there.
We used to live there.
They just got practically everything.
It's a beautiful place. They have wide streets and beautiful roses and dogwoods planted along by the side of the street. When you first come in from Tallahassee, it's not too beautiful. It's kind of slummy looking, but when you get further on in, they have a lot of people there with money too. Big plantations and things. I don't know what you can do with that stuff I tried to make, but it tastes sort of bitter. Not just tart, but kind of bitter, that feel.
I've got pictures of the dress shop. It's not in here, but I got their home, the Stathis home.
Can I see that? What did people...
That's the doctor.
Oh, yeah?
When he's dead now, but... He's a little younger than I am. That's the dad there. Tells a little story about it.
Arcadia. Yeah, it says distinguished. What paper was this in, sir?
That's in the local paper, Arcadia. Soda County. Arcadia.
It's in the Arcadian. It's 6/12/1947. And reach at the top, distinguished DeSultan.
Yeah.
And it says it's got a picture of Stam, which probably Stamatis. Stathis. So it's Stam Stathis, Arcadian merchant, was a native of Greece and was born in 1896 on the island of Aegina, 18 miles from Athens. After finishing junior high school in his native city, which was very impressive to have done, he entered an engineering school at Athens, where he remained until his father, a Tarpon Springs deep sea diver, returned to Greece in ill health. Young Stathis was forced to leave school, I beg your pardon, and take care of his family. End of paragraph. He worked in a shoe factory until 1911 when he came to the United States to join his father, who had returned the previous year. Stathis spent some time at Inverness working in a phosphate mine and later with the railroad. Still later, he worked at a sawmill in Plant City before moving to Nocatee, where he worked for the crate company.
That's about 40 miles south of here.
Yeah. New paragraph. While living in Nocatee, he often visited Arcadia and decided it offered an ideal location for a shoe store and repair shop. He entered the business here, period, new paragraph. Stathis entered the Army in 1917, serving 2 years in this country and overseas. He received his citizenship papers while he was in the Army, end of paragraph. New paragraph. He returned to Arcadia after leaving the Army and reopened his business, which had been closed while he was in service. He had a line of men's furnishings and was getting along all right until 1927, when the business was destroyed by fire. He reopened a short time later, and in 1944 branched out with a ladies' ready-to-wear department. End of paragraph. New paragraph. Stathis owns considerable property in Arcadia and has recently completed one storeroom to his holdings on Magnolia Street, and has another one under construction. End of paragraph. New paragraph. He is a charter member of the American Legion and has served as first and second vice commander of the local post. He is also a member of the VFW and Chamber of Commerce. There's another. This is all again the same page here. It says Stathis Boot Shop, quality, standard quality for less, opposite First National Bank, and that's from 3-6-1930. 8-6-53 says Stathis Director, and it says here a little thing that says 3-7-40. Stam Stathis buys building on Magnolia Street and Polk Avenue. This week,
he was one of the original founders of the board of directors of the First Federal downtown. It's now Goldon.
Yeah.
Right at the corner of Polk and Oak Street.
Huh.
There he is right there.
Do you have the original of that photograph?
No. No, here he is here.
Yeah.
No, I don't have the original of that.
That's okay.
But I've got a picture of a bank building he used to own here after the bank went busted in 1929. It was called the Florida Trust and Banking Company. Mm-hmm. I remember it. I think I might have sold that picture. This story about it here. But he bought that building after it was busted.
Hmm. What did the people think? I mean, when these men came, was there any reflection about them being
the Greeks?
Yeah.
No, they were well accepted in the community. There were always people who were thrifty. They were in either dress shops, restaurant building, business, or shoe repairing. There was another, Bob Clifton, too.
Bob Clifton?
Yeah, he was. He went to Lakeland from here.
They were very friendly.
I was trying to think of some others that, and beautiful people, too. I mean, this Stathis girl, and wife was a beautiful thing, and his daughter was just a beautiful. And the son was very attractive.
The daughter still lives in Tampa, doesn't
yeah.
she?
Now, here's another one. This guy was more prominent. He got into
it's okay,
he looked kind of like Al Capone.
Yeah.
He had a scarf. A lot of people thought he was Al Capone.
This is a great original picture.
Yeah, that's
Cavus Bakery and Lunch.
Yeah, he owned two cafes one time in town. This is when he owned a cafe, and look at the meal he got for 25 cents back in 32. Now he was the one that owned this building instead of Stathis.
Well, here are more pictures.
Cavus, yeah, that's more of mine. This is why.
Where did you get these photographs, can I ask?
I got them from that studio I bought.
Is that
I
right?
Got the negatives. These are proofs here, actually. So you see what I'm talking about when I want to write about a person or something.
You can go right to the negative.
I go to the file here because this man was on a photographer here from 1914 about the 55. Mm-hmm. Now this is an adopted girl.
Mm-hmm.
And she owns property still in Arcadia from this man. They're both buried in a mausoleum out here at the cemetery, a nice mausoleum.
Does the girl live in town anywhere?
She lived in Fort Myers, and her husband is vice president of First National Bank, I believe, in Fort Myers. Gilbert Smith is his name.
Gilbert Smith?
Gilbert.
Gilbert?
Gilbert.
Gilbert yeah. Smith.
Yeah. But he was in the liquor business, I guess, longer than anywhere else around here after repeal of the 18th Amendment. Was it 18th Amendment? 21st Amendment, where it was when they repealed. Outlaw whiskey, and he got into the liquor business and made a lot of money there.
How many families or individual Greeks would you say there have been, as far as you can recall now?
Well, I'd say there have been at least a dozen families, probably more. I was trying to think about some besides Stathis and Cavus.
Clifton, did you say?
Clifton, Bob Clifton, he left here early in the 30s.
Was he a Greek?
Yeah.
Jewish
yeah.
Clifton?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Greeks, they had such long names, they either dropped part of part of it, like Astathis. That wasn't his real full name.
No.
But
do you know what his full name was?
I think it's Stamathathis or something like that. Stamathathis. And I think that like Jews did the same thing.
They all groups
their
did.
Names and Ukrainians, Russians, all of that, they got their names long. You can't even spell it, much less pronounce it, a lot of them. And in America, names like that are so difficult, and I guess there's stigma attached to a lot of names, long names like that. So
if these guys were local in town and you have a file on ads, do you have ads that their businesses ran?
Well, they have what they call these Pope from Nashville that publishes those books every year on businesses and people. What do they call?
Business directories?
Directories, city directories. Yeah.
City directories?
Yeah.
Do they have them in your library here?
Chamber of Commerce has a bunch of them, and I'm sure the library has some too. Chamber of Commerce.
So then all I would do is go back to that year?
Yeah.
And then it would there be ads?
Well, all they'd do would be tell what type of business he was in, how many children he had, where he lived, and what he did, what business he was in, but nothing.
Yeah, personal.
It's not like a...
Yeah, no, sir. You know what I initially meant, Howard, was that here in town, if the Arcadian was the place where everybody read the newspaper, would this guy like Stathis or any of these other guys, would they run ads for their business?
For
their liquor stores and for their stuff?
Yeah. Well, like I showed you a picture of
Gaddis's thing with 25-cent lunch,
and things like that, and he had Stathis' dress shop was in the paper quite a bit, and they advertised just like everybody else. I mean, I don't think that really, if there was prejudice against people like that, I didn't know even Jews. I mean, they were well received. We had outstanding Jews here, you know, and everybody knew they were Jews, but I mean, they were people. I guess the only people who really were discriminated against was the blacks and perhaps Seminole Indians.
Was that, can you think now, was it a matter of it being like there were so few? Like, you know, if there were 5 Greeks or 10 Jews or...
Well, it might have been there were few in number, but they were all respectable people, clean people, and business people, thrifty people. And usually they were people that had come over here from Greece that really took advantage of a situation and were models, more or less, not scums and not riffraffs, but people who really came to the new world, so to speak, to succeed, and they did. Most all of them did. I mean, they seemed to take more of advantage because they weren't born in the opportunities that we were born in, and a lot of times they could see the advantage of working later hours and getting there earlier and going the extra mile, whereas a lot of us were lackadaisical about it and just took a lot of things for granted that they didn't. But I think that there was always a feeling, they may have had a feeling of intimidation, but I don't think the average person, I never did think, it never did bother me because of a person's language, impediment of speech.
Did this man, do you remember this man?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Did he speak with an accent?
He just lived one block from him. Yes, he had a... But I think people kind of enjoy that little... Just like, well, even English speaking people from England, Australia, they speak with an accent that's almost foreign to us, but we enjoy it, see? So I don't... I don't think there's prejudice, that type of prejudice. I never did notice around here. That could have been against Jews, maybe, because they would come in and do such good business, and they were the ones that started selling everything 99 cents to a dollar, and this kind of stuff, you know. And we used to think, you know, a thing ought to be a dollar or 95 cents, but not 99 cents, and this type of prejudice, but nothing serious that I can recall. And we had the Jews that were lawyers and builders, businessmen, and church people.